This week on Art in the Air features the professor behind printmaking at IU South Bend, William Tortelot, whose work revolves around themes of plant forms, current news, and popular culture. Next, the co-founder and director of the Syracuse Poster Project, Jim Emmons, that creates an illustrated poetry posters. Our spotlight's on Meg DeBake's presentation of the 1933 World's Fair project.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight. She's been with us many times before from the Family Folklore Foundation. And, of course, we're still talking about the 1933 World's Fair tales. And Dr. Meg DeMakis is going to read a little sample for us later on in the interview. But welcome back. And she's going to be doing a reading Saturday, April 19th at the Crown Point Main Library, downtown Crown Point. So you can hear her actually read that, and we'll have a sample here. Meg, welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, it's always great to see you, Meg.
Good to see you, too.
So this is really, you're continuing this project. Of course, you had the thing at IUN where you used the tents to represent the houses and things like that. So now you're going to go out and spread the word about the fair and everything. So tell us a little about what people can expect at this reading.
Well, I am going to read passages, but I also have a PowerPoint presentation when I go through the presentation that we gave at IUN. And then I also have a short documentary. It's about 3 minutes long that goes along with it.
Oh, excellent. How long you've been working on this project? I know we may have covered that before in some of our interviews, but you've been kind of working this. I know it's where I think your brother that kind of set the thing and you decided to kind of pick up the ball and remember that. Tell us a little bit about the history of that.
Yeah. In the 90s, my brother, Dan Grandfield, who's a landscape architect, He was always wondering about how those houses made it over to Beverly Shores. And so he did a study on it and put a report together for the Indiana Historical Society. And then he passed away. And so I found his work and I'm like, oh, well, let's continue this. And so that's what we did. We got some grant money from the Indiana Historical Society and the humanities and South Shore Arts. And so that financed us doing a couple of things like going through the houses. And we also took a boat ride to see what it was like to come over. The houses came over on a barge. So, and they were pushed by a tugboat that was powered by steam. So we rode one of the steamboats that they have at Cedar Lake. And we also rode on a vessel in Lake Michigan to see what it was like to be out there on the sea. And then we had everybody learn how to paint. So they painted their version of the houses. And then I had them write about what it would be like to be one of those houses. So that's what we did. And then, since a lot of the materials we got were actually guidebooks from the fair, I decided to make a guidebook of our project, the Millennia of Progress, 1933 to 2023, World's Fairy Tales, If Houses Could Talk.
And that's available where, by the way?
You can get it on Amazon, but I also have it at local bookstores, at the Munster Performing Arts, in Beverly Shores, at, I think it's called The Press. It's on, it's in Valpo. Yeah, I have it in quite a few places. Yeah. So, and I've given a talk already at the Rotary Club in Crown Point, and the president of that society was also is like the director of the Crown Point Library, and she suggested that I come over and talk there too. So I'm going to.
So the Crown Point talk is to just make more people aware of it, or are you looking for more funding?
No, not more funding, just to get the word out. So that's one of the missions of Family Folklore. We offer educational experiences to people of all ages, you know, to go out into the community and research and learn. And then we also want to share it with other people. So, you know, we just have an ever broadening effect.
Well, maybe take us a quick sample of what they can expect at the reading.
Okay. The book, which has that big title, Millennia of Progress, okay, is a companion book that World Fair buffs will love. Dr. Meg Granfield Dominguez, primary author and editor, is the Family Folklore Foundation CEO. The mission of the nonprofit is to offer learning experiences via field expositions, research, and interviews to people of all ages. The study is the 1933 Chicago World's Fair and the relocation of the Century Progress Homes to Beverly Shores, Indiana. The centerpiece of the study was the multimedia presentation on April 19th at the Main Stage Theater at IUN. And then there's also a documentary that will be shown on April 19th over at the Crown Point Main Library at between 1 and 2. They have a special, they have a lot of nice rooms there, you know, with full media possibilities.
Oh, very good. So, and of course, this is a free admission, I presume.
Yes, free admission is right. And I hope that lots of people will come. Many years ago, I'd say about 10 years ago, I did a presentation about Jean Stratton Porter, who was an Indiana author and photographer from, she was born around the Civil War. And then she passed away in the 20s. And there was standing room only. There was a lot of people that were interested in the Girl of the Limberlost. That was one of her books. Yeah. So I expect a lot of people.
And you have another project. Very quickly, tell us about that in just the last few seconds here, and then once again, the dates.
Well, Once Upon a Time in Maggie's Key West is kind of a springboard from the study, especially the Florida house. My grandparents retired to Homestead, Florida, and our family of eight, when I was a little girl, used to go down there and visit, and so I've written a children's book about that.
We appreciate you coming on Art on the Air Spotlight. Again, Meg Dominguez will be at the Crown Point Main Library downtown April 19th, 1 to 2 p.m., and you can hear readings and a PowerPoint presentation. Meg, thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much, Meg.
Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker.
This is Rissa August, author of The Road Unpaved, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome William Tortelot to Art on the Air. Bill is a lecturer in printmaking at Indiana University South Bend since 2015. Previously, he was chief curator, program director, and curator of education at the South Bend Museum of Art, and has been a visiting assistant professor at various universities teaching printmaking, drawing, sculpture, and digital graphic arts. He has also conducted cultural workshops, comic book classes, and has painted murals with young artists. He also maintains a personal, vibrant, and active art practice. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Bill. It's really wonderful seeing you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we always like to start our interviews with finding out all about our guests. I always like to say their origin story. I'll tee it up by saying how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Bill.
I grew up in central Pennsylvania, Clearfield. It was a small town of about 20,000 people. My family was four boys, six of us total. I have three brothers. And pretty early on, we did a lot of drawing together. And I was, I suppose, the one out of the four who really kind of paid attention to it and enjoyed it. And so I was encouraged through lots of pencils and paper and art making activities to continue expressing myself. I had a couple of teachers who were quite influential, a guy named Willard Dominic, when I was in grade school, kind of paid attention to what I was making and talked me through the process. I had a guitar teacher, and although I couldn't really keep time or tune, Paul Lynch was an African-American blues artist. He had a band in my hometown, and he taught me to appreciate the origins of rock and roll, which were the blues and jazz. And although I wanted to play Stairway to Heaven, he gently encouraged me to pursue learning chord scales and, you know, the core of the blues expression. And so Paul, although probably not realizing it and not as a visual artist, really taught me to look for and seek out new and different ways to not only express myself, but to think about the world. I wound up leaving Central Pennsylvania for art school. I decided that I would seek a degree in the visual arts, and particularly because we had done printmaking as a family, using silkscreen to create Christmas cards, I had a certain affinity to putting ink on paper. And so I spent 5 years in Cleveland. It was a five-year program to get a BFA in printmaking with a minor in painting and drawing. And so from there, I went on to graduate school in Detroit to Cranbrook Academy of Art. It was an interesting school in that it was only graduate students, and it was 2 years, pretty intense, but really helped me clarify what I wanted to do and how I wanted to use art within my life. Fortunately, one of my studio mates at that time was turned out to be my wife, Julie. We met in the shop and developed a professional relationship as art workers, and then eventually became more. But today we still share a studio, split it right down the middle. We each get a half, and together have kind of made an artful life. I first came to South Bend in 1985. I kind of followed Julie here. She had a job at St. Mary's College, and we've been in South Bend ever since. There's always been art and work, and, you know, I've quite enjoyed this community.
Oh, it's like a community filled with brilliant artists. I mean, you've got Kay West Hughes there. I mean, it's like fabulous. And the printmaker I know from South Bend is Ron Chupp. Did you know Ron Chupp at all?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
He's a good friend. He's just his lithography always made, and him, he's got a brilliant sense of humor. So he adds the humor to his printmaking. But you know what? I'm going to pull you right back to childhood for a minute.
Certainly.
So what were those first drawings? You said that you were drawing a lot, drawing as a family. Do you remember the types? Were you drawing the outdoors? Were you
Of the outdoors, we were baseball card collectors, and so we did a lot of profiles of ball caps and long sideburns from you know, various baseball players, and it would then be athletic images. I drew a lot of hands early on, interestingly enough, and hands are still kind of a predominant element in my work. I still have a work from that time. I did a relief print of five different renditions of a hand with abstract and realistic. I don't really remember at the time what compelled me, but it's been a consistent element. I still have that print. It's been a consistent element through the work, you know, all these years later. So I was encouraged to, when I was in high school, do some murals in the school itself with other students. And, you know, murals have been a part of my public expression since that time as well. So I think sampling a variety of things, largely drawing and painting, but I'm still surprised all these years later how certain things reoccur and I reach for without really realizing that they're coming around again. It's been this kind of interesting cyclical way that the content and the ideas have kind of flowed.
You know, as a professor, one of the things that you said is you really don't separate your professorship from being an artist. You kind of blend those. And I also loved how some of the comments you made about working in the print shop, how you think printmaking is kind of a solo thing, but how there's a collaborative thing. Maybe talk a little bit about that process of with students and being collaborative and even the sense of even while they're working on their project, they feel a part of a whole printmaking community.
Yes. So we are in a shop. The shop at Indiana University South Bend is about 1,500 square feet. So it's a really nice space. It's got a big window on one end and high ceilings. And it becomes really a community. And it's a community of people working towards the same goal, using the same medium. But it's interesting that it's this kind of melting pot of students who might be just starting college. It might be adults who've come back to take another course, or others who are interested specifically in the media and the medium, perhaps to push their art forward in a different direction. So we're dependent upon each other to have the materials and the equipment and everything function. And so community in a print shop is really primary in that I have to do my work, but I also have to be considerate of you doing your work. And that may be as simple as making sure that I clean up the glass after I've worked so that you find it fresh and don't have to start by cleaning, but can start by expressing yourself. And so I really enjoy that back and forth. The students teach me things. Hopefully I teach them things. It's a really kind of wonderful exchange. We're creative problem solving. So it's life skills beyond this studio that we share that hopefully they are able to kind of engage the world and not only make things, but express themselves as a result of being within this community.
So in your classroom, are there various techniques being used, or is when it's lithography, is everybody doing lithography, or are there a variety of techniques happening within the same classroom?
Variety of techniques. There's always a basic class running, and we hit kind of four major areas with that. And then there are advanced classes going on that will be media specific, for instance, screen printing or intaglio or etching. And sometimes there's a couple of those. So I teach stacked advanced classes. And then there are also these kind of satellites that rotate around the group that are independent study and advanced VFA printmakers. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, no boredom there.
No. And not only am I the teacher, then you're also responsible for the tools and the materials, the ordering, the maintenance, you know, all those kind of things that make almost become the lubrication of the whole process working.
And so you were the one instrumental in greening up your program. Is that true, or was that in place before
no,
you?
Yes. I was really quite interested in having a non-toxic environment and doing greener, sustainable printmaking. So when I was a student, we didn't really care much about exposure to solvents and the toxicity of materials. And as a result, a lot of people got pretty sick. And I personally now have an allergy to solvents. So I can't be in a room or I'm instantly with headache. And so I sought out to find ways to express myself in printmaking that contemporized the process and also then took out the toxicity. And it's a lot of testing. It's a lot of trial and error. And, you know, once in a while, you publicly make a mistake or something doesn't work. So with humility, you have to kind of figure out the next route. It's very true to printmaking in that there are lots of variables that you have to master in order to kind of get predictable results. So I'm quite proud of the fact that you can come into my shop and there's no toxicity and you can make prints without, you know, any kind of health hazard or detrimental elements to your health, to your person.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Does this connect also to your interest in solar energy? I mean, the whole greening of the products inside your shop that you use, but I see as you have a strong interest in using solar energy in ways.
Yes, I have a solar array that powers my house, and just enough. They build it so you don't send extra back to the grid. baseboard heaters, it works perfectly. If I go back to that small town in Clearfield, Pennsylvania, driving to school on the school bus in the morning, everybody heated with coal. And so the town was quite full of the smoke from coal furnaces. And I was really troubled by that. And so I've pursued ways to create energy, to work, to grow food that are non-toxic and hopefully are renewing or regenerating to the environment that I'm a part of.
Yeah, it seems like your family is... art is a profession for the whole family, it seems, in all aspects. It was very beautiful to read about. So does your son also, is he an artist?
No, Henry's more of a craftsman. He is a worker in, he's done industrial cleaning. He's done a lot of construction. So he's a maker without kind of necessarily the artist label. He has a great eye and is wonderful with materials and techniques. But I don't know that he would call himself an artist. Julie, on the other hand, is pretty extraordinary. I'm constantly amazed by the work that she makes and her ability to teach and give information. We started out teaching together, and so we could figure it out little by little, class by class together, and then we kind of went to separate institutions. So several years after we'd separated, I was able to hear her lecture and see her in a classroom, and it just kind of knocked me out how good she was and that she had this really wonderful talent to be able to talk to artists and help them with their work. So we've shared that. It's been interesting that we're both individual artists, but we are also then a couple of artists as well. So,
what are you working on now, personally?
In October, I finished a commission for the South Bend Heritage Foundation. It was their 50th anniversary, and they commissioned me to make two prints that celebrated that anniversary. They were screen prints and book forms. So I've just really wrapped that up, and I'm now in the process of starting a new body of prints, aiming towards a show in the fall. So I've been working with some digital, some inkjet. I've used both screen printing. There's photopolymer plates and relief to kind of dialogue between the inkjet and the screen printing. So largely I'm making prints that are drawing based. I suppose same as it ever was. In that, you know, once one thing's finished, you're back in the shop, you clean up the work area, and then you just start pushing again. And that's kind of been the whole story, is that For me, the answers come through the work that it shows me what it needs, talks to me a little bit, maybe flashes a bit of magic or entices me to continue making. And so really being an artist and the art is what continually kind of pushes me forward.
You know, a question I have, and this may be dear to your heart, being in South Bend, is the controversy surrounding the art museum, what's happening there, or what the town or the city wants to do. And I don't know if you have any response to that, what you feel about what's happening, or whether that's going to be relocated. So what are your feelings about that?
Let's see. I went to the meetings and listened to the city talk about what they had planned. I guess what struck me is, sadly, the museum was quite surprised by what the city was proposing. So the communication was not there. And as a result, you know, I really kind of question the veracity of the choice to pull down the museum if you're not communicating with the art community, which really kind of rebuilt the East Race and re-energized the city itself. So just as an observer, the process is flawed if you're not talking to each other. The building itself is a Philip Johnson building. It's an architectural, standout. I understand the need to kind of reach the river and engage in that, but there's enough other ways without pulling down a significant building in your town in order to just kind of gaze at the river. So I'm not a fan. I understand what they're after, and I think their intent certainly was honorable, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And if no one's had a chance to discuss it and put in input, you know, any good idea, you got to put out into the public. And I think that if it's really good idea, other people are going to react in positive ways and add to that idea. And so that didn't happen. And that I find just a bit troubling.
Yeah, that is. It's it really is a beautiful facility. I mean, it's co-located with the exhibit center there next door, and how it's even connected to the hotel. And so I was a little surprised by that. I know even our communities back here in Northwest Indiana, there's a lot of discussion in the arts community. How can we support what's going on? You know, because again, it was kind of a surprise to all of us.
I think, you know, democracy works that people get out and stand up and voice their opinion, and then collectively we all make a decision. And maybe you have to compromise a little bit. Maybe there's some way to put a glass face on one side of it so it can become more kind of river friendly. I'm not sure, but we need those discussions in order to get to that solution. Right. So that the community is looked after and supported.
Agreed.
Is there, you've done printmaking for 30 some years, but is there some other type of art that you would like to explore that you never done? I know, like oil painting or something completely different.
Well, I've thoroughly really enjoyed digital image making and the possibilities there. I think that, pushing that a bit further, perhaps into using 3D printing to make block prints, to use some of the technology through computer-aided design is always intriguing. It takes as much kind of practice. The Chinese say that you got to throw 10,000 cylinders, clay cylinders, before you throw your first ceramic or clay cylinder. And so each media that you then move into requires its own study before really you can kind of produce to your satisfaction. And so the direction I would head off in is thinking about my digital images and what's the new way to kind of use them to express what's important to me. and hopefully then convey meaning to the people looking at what I make.
So it sounds like this next body of work is going to include kind of everything that you do. Is that what you have envisioned? Is it going to be like an exhibition that would have digital and your other printmaking techniques all together?
Yes. You know, I was a big fan of the comic strip Blondie. And, you know, Dagwood would go into the refrigerator and he would pull everything out on the kitchen table and then make a club sandwich, you know, stacked high, barely get his hands around it. And so sometimes I think about printmaking that way, with the layering and the stacking and the taking away and the adding in. So that, yes, I think the new work will be a bit of a club sandwich, and I'm trying to figure out which pieces fit, pull one out, put one in, a little bit like Jenga. So, you know, you got that balance going on, but I anticipate the new work will be kind of a hybrid mix of things.
It's an exciting place to be.
We're in our final moments here, and we want to give you a chance to say how people can find you online, information about you, and, you know, you kind of projected out in the upcoming exhibits, but if you have any more specific dates past April here.
I'm pretty much in the studio, probably. I'll have the show in the fall. I do have an Instagram. It's artbert01, artbert01. And you can reach me on Facebook at William Tortolot. And I also respond to email if you go to Indiana University's website. wtortle@iu.edu is a way to reach out and maybe we collaborate on some prints or, you know, get some art going. I'm open to certainly working with anybody who has an interest. And, you know, just trying to make our community and largely the art community stronger as we move forward.
Well, that's excellent. Well, we appreciate coming on Art in the Air and sharing your art journey with us. And again, we will have a link on our website when they click on your picture that will take you to, I guess the Instagram would probably be the best one there. So our guest today was William Tortolot. He's a premier printmaker for IU South Bend and has a great work that you can see online. Appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your whole art journey.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been a complete pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Raina Duras, host of World Cafe, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Jim Emmons to Art on the Air. Jim is the co-founder and director of the Syracuse Poster Project. Founded in 2000, the project brings together poets and Central New York artists to create an annual series of illustrated poetry posters for public display. Jim has a background in science, journalism, and art. He enjoys French culture, cooking, photography, drawing, swimming, skiing, baking, and running. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Jim. Such a pleasure seeing you.
Thank you, Esther. Thank you, Larry.
Glad to have you on, Jim. And our audiences always want to know a little bit about our guests, their background story. I always like to say their origin story, how they got from where they were to where they are now. So tell us all about Jim.
I'm a native of Vermont. I grew up in central Vermont, and I had a beautiful childhood in the countryside, grew up doing a lot of outdoor activities, had a lot of art in our family. And although I am not a professional artist, I have been enjoying art, drawing, some painting throughout my life. And in college, I studied science. I studied, as Esther mentioned, physics, and got a degree in physics. I was not good at finding a path in physics. I was sort of floundering around. And in that moment of, I don't know what I'm going to do, I went with some friends to a ski area, got a job at a ski area just to keep myself afloat job, and began writing there, freelance writing for newspapers. I had always enjoyed writing, and I wrote for a weekly newspaper, And I worked my way into the journalism business without having any journalism schooling. Had an internship at a newspaper and then got a job at a Vermont newspaper. And I worked there for a number of years, hoping to work my way into feature writing, to move from writing news to writing feature stories. And that's what brought me to Central New York in approximately 1990. I searched for jobs all around the country. I found a journalism job with a newspaper here in Syracuse, New York, with the Syracuse Post-Standard. And this was a journalism job to write feature stories for a neighbor's section of the newspaper. And my job was to write about recreational activities. So it's very much a feature job. And I was not doing that too long before I got sucked back into the news business. So I was writing stories about school boards, town boards, village boards, courts. And I did that for a long time at the Syracuse newspapers. And then finally, I worked my way back into feature writing. And that was a goal of mine, to write for the feature section of the newspaper. I did that for a while. And while I was there, I had to write an editorial. This was a rotating responsibility for writers. When the editorial writers would go on vacation, other writers had to step in and write an editorial. And I chose to write an editorial about the condition of our city's poster kiosks. The city had undergone a major renovation of the downtown streetscape, and that included new sidewalks, new benches, new lamp posts, and these poster kiosks on the sidewalk that were intended for downtown merchants to advertise in. And I was working downtown. I saw these kiosks be installed, and I had high hopes for them to display good commercial art, but they kind of flopped. The city could not really persuade merchants to buy ads for these kiosks. So instead of them becoming an asset for the city, they were something of a bane or a black eye, underused. Right.
They're probably developing condensation and all sorts of stuff in there.
Yeah, they had outdated material. So I wrote an editorial about that, complaining and said, you know, why can't our city get it together with these kiosks and have good graphic art in the kiosks? Nothing much came of that. And it wasn't too long after that experience that the newspaper said, we really would rather have you be a police reporter or be an editor. And so we don't want you writing features anymore. And I was absolutely crestfallen. I had spent so much time.
Did you upset the city? Is that why they said that?
Excuse me?
Did they upset the city? Is that why? Did they get kickback from the city about that?
Oh, no. The editorial that I wrote about the kiosks had just very little resonance. Nothing much happened because of it. So I made my point, but nothing much changed with the kiosks. And then the newspaper was dissatisfied with my work and said, you know, we'd rather have you be an editor or a police reporter. And I was really crestfallen. And so I said, you know, I really don't know what I'm going to do next, but I don't want to tear my life up. I don't want to move to another city to try to get another newspaper job. I'm going to try to do something about this thing I had complained about, the state of the kiosks. And so in that moment of uncertainty about next steps, I said, let me try to think of something that we could do with these kiosks. And the city already had a weekly newspaper that was running a poetry, annual poetry contest. It was called the Sear Haiku Poetry Contest, to have people write haiku about the city. So it's a weekly newspaper, not the newspaper I worked for. And so I was aware of that tradition. I was also aware that Syracuse University had a very strong illustration program. And so I made a pitch. I made a pitch to the professor who taught illustration at Syracuse University, Roger DeMuth. I said, could we combine these resources? Could we have people write haiku about the city and have your students illustrate them? And then the kiosks, that's the downtown committee of Syracuse, and persuade the downtown committee that this is a viable idea. And so that was back in 2001, I believe, and we came out with the first poster series in 2002. So that's the origin story of...
That's how the two were married together. So can you take it further and how were the initial printings? How did they happen? Was there community support to get them printed? How did you, were the artists initially invited to do it? Like in that classroom, did the instructor say, you know, 20 of you, was it a class project? I don't know. I'm interested in the whole genesis.
Yes. So we piggybacked on this existing tradition of people writing haiku for the weekly newspapers contest. We reached out to those same people, invited them to either resubmit their poems to us or to write fresh poems. And we had a collection of this work at the time of the deadline. And we would bring those poems up to the illustration class at Syracuse University. The professor, Roger DeMuth, agreed to make this a class project for his fall semester. So we had an illustration class. I believe there were two classes at that point. And we would go up to the university and distribute these poems with the class, give students little slips of paper like Chinese fortunes with the poems written on them. And they would each get a handful of poems from which they would have to select one haiku to illustrate. And they would illustrate the haiku. The class might consist altogether of maybe 30 student artists. And then we would have a selection process where we would select the best approximately 15 of those posters. And we would have them printed large format for the kiosks and then have them also reproduced for sale at a smaller scale, 11 by 17. And, you know, the notion was we will try to sell these poster prints and that will sustain the project. It was a very naive notion.
But every year you did grow. So how did that growth continue? Did you qualify for granting? Were there business support?
We have supported the project through a combination of selling the products we make, and we've tried to diversify what we make. We make the poster prints, and we make note cards and little booklets of poetry. And that results in a relatively small portion of our budget. We also support ourselves by seeking corporate sponsorship from local businesses and also from applying for charitable grants. And the work of getting corporate sponsorship, that's quite difficult, very competitive. A lot of other nonprofit entities seeking support. We were not immediately a nonprofit. We were piggybacking on the nonprofit status of the university for several years, and we eventually achieved our own nonprofit status.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
Jim, I want to go back to see some of the activities that you're doing. Well, one interest, mutual interest is photography, and you have drawing, swimming, skiing, cycling, which is another one that I have. So tell us about a little bit about your photography and what you equipment you use and what kind of subjects you shoot.
I am a photographer who did some photography for the newspapers when I was in Vermont. These were small newspapers that didn't have extensive photography staffs for their bureaus. And so I was doing photography to illustrate the stories that I was writing on occasion, sometimes shooting feature photographs. I was using a film camera. I was using an antiquated Leica that I inherited from my father. And then as I came to Central New York and began my work here, I eventually migrated to a smartphone, and I asked myself, why did I take so long? Why did I take so long to switch to a smartphone? And the kinds of things that I photographed most recently, the Syracuse St. Patrick's Day parade. I love to go to the parade and take photographs. Not so much of the parade. The parade itself is good, but photographs of the people who turn out for the parade. So I go every year, and sometimes I post these photographs on the Facebook page of the poster project, in that, you know, we're making public art, and the parade, the St. Patrick's Parade, is really a sort of a giant community event that qualifies in my mind as public art, and the people too, and they dressing up for St. Patrick's Day. So yeah, that, and I'm also interested in panoramic photography, in crowd situations, taking panoramic photographs, where the panoramic function on the camera will often have a lot of detritus, or it'll have, when somebody is moving within the image, that will be a striated fragment of color. Yeah, and I used to look at that and say, oh, I'm going to get rid of that. I'm going to edit that out. But now I kind of preserve those defects. I think they're interesting ghosts.
So you had mentioned that you're taking photographs for the newspaper. Were you writing those first stories in Vermont, were they human interest stories?
Some of them were, yes. At the newspaper in Vermont, I was writing occasional profiles of people, human interest stories, but also hard news, covering school board meetings, fires, police, stuff like that.
So let's take your cycling. What do you do? Is it just a kind of casual? Do you do like long distance cycling, or just, you know, tell us about that?
I am not a hardcore cycler, but I was lucky when I was young. A friend of our family's was importing Peugeot bicycles from France. And so I was, as a teenager, I got a Peugeot road bike. And I was very avid about going out on day-long and sometimes overnight bike rides in Vermont. And so I still have a road bike, and I bike to work. I commute. It's a very short commute from my house. It's probably a mile and a half up and down a hill. And otherwise, my biking around Syracuse is largely commuting biking. Occasionally, I'll go out into the countryside and bike for pleasure. My wife is also an avid cyclist. She commutes to work. And together, we will go on day trips on occasion. Load up the bike. I've got a bike that's got nice saddlebags on the back. I can load it up with produce from the farmer's market and do my grocery shopping that way.
Well, that's great. So other activities that you do, you know, you still do drawing and things like that. And of course, you had running on your list. And just curious about that.
Syracuse is a good art community. It has a very, very long-standing figure drawing group called Open Figure Drawing. Meets once a week historically at a community center. And early in my life here in Syracuse, I would attend after work on Wednesday nights. So I was working as a reporter. I would go and draw from a live model for 3 hours on Wednesday nights. And that was a really beautiful way to de-stress at the end of the day, a very meditative practice. And this group, you know, I have been participating now since the early 90s, many years, and many of the original people are still there. And this drawing group has proliferated. It has, drawing group has really done a remarkable job about having other venues for drawing outreach programs. And so I do my best to continue participating there.
So did you spend much time in France?
I did a postgraduate year in France. I have a lot of French culture in my family, pseudo-relatives who are French, not actual relatives. And I went to the University of Grenoble for a postgraduate year after I finished my degree at Syracuse University. And I spent a year there studying French and monitoring physics classes. And then that was my academic year in France. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
Is the love of cooking French cooking or just cooking in general?
I'm just a big cooker. I love cooking. I do a lot of cooking on the weekend. I go to the farmer's market. I improvise. I do cooking for the week on the weekend. And then I have my bag lunches all ready to go for the week.
Is there something that you haven't done in art culture that you wanted to do that, you know, I'm doing this poster project as an ongoing thing, but there's some unfulfilled artistic thing you want to do or cultural thing?
I love making mini videos, and I don't have a ton of time to do that, but I have become quite interested in making videos to document the work we do, videos about other people in the arts community. And so I do aspire to have more time to create videos and to distribute them.
I have a poster project question. So every year you come up with, like a new theme or, so do you come up with them or is that a committee that sort of tosses around ideas because they're just so brilliant?
Thank you. I may pitch an idea, but we discuss it with our board members. We put it out to a larger community. We'll do an email blast to ask our poets and say, hey, here are some things we're thinking about. Please fill out this Google form. Let us know what you're thinking about these possibilities. And for many years, the theme was very general, right about downtown, the city at large, the nearby countryside. And then we tried to be a little more specific with our prompts and had the notion of prompting people to write about what we call the spirits of Syracuse, spirit of neighborhood kindliness, spirit of nostalgic items, to just give people another reason for writing about something other than downtown or generally about the city.
Now, they're exciting themes. I think they're very exciting.
So, Jim, tell us a little bit about, you told us about the project. Is there anything else in the city you'd like to expand that to? You know, you do these poster frames, but maybe like window displays in the businesses or something like that?
We have diversified the venues where the poster art appears. In addition to the kiosks, we seek out and develop other public venues for permanent poster panels. So these appear on along the Creek Walk by the Erie Canal Museum. We also have a traveling flat screen with a rotating display of posters. And we try to bring that to a new venue every month or so. And we are looking for other ways to distribute our poetry. We have a large archive of poetry. and we have done some dynamic text treatments of that poetry and put that out on flat screens as well and projections.
Well, in our last minute here, we'd like to know, our audience to know, how to contact you, websites, Facebook, or other things, and then reach out to you to, if they're interested in your project.
Very easy to reach the Poster Project at our website, posterproject.org. And to reach me, jim@posterproject.org. And we also have a big presence on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
Very good. Well, we appreciate coming on Art on the Air, that Jim Edmonds, the Poster Project, and you can find him on posterproject.org, and you can see the whole thing. And you have, real quick, you do have something special coming on later in April?
We are celebrating the release of the 2025 posters, 14 posters featuring legendary Central New York businesses. And that event happens on the 25th of April, 6 to 8 p.m. downtown.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing everything about the Poster Project.
Larry, thank you. Thank you, Esther.
Oh, thank you so much, Jim. It's been a pleasure.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell it to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.